Thank you very much. I think it's an honor to be the last speaker and to I'll try to do my best. I think after we've seen the environmental issues that affect reaching the Millennium Development Goals, the urgent need and inequalities, what can we do about it? So I'd like to disclose that I'm dedicated to reaching the Millennium Development Goals, and that especially we must achieve MDG 5. And I work every day, I want to disclose every day, to make MDG 5 a must. So with that disclosure, the objectives for the next 10 minutes is to discuss ways of reaching the Millennium Development Goals. What can we do? And discuss ways of working at global scale so we can really have impact, especially addressing the differences between different regions and different countries. And describe an approach that we use to accelerate reaching the Millennium Development Goals, especially MDG 5, which we call Health for All Women Now. And it's an approach to create urgency and to start doing something now, not until 2015. And also, we describe how we do that through online assistance, so we really reach out to more people in a more cost-effective way. But the basis of all this is, as I said before, it's a human rights-based approach. And the context, if some of you, I think, Sam, you were right there in the front row in the other session about MDGs and the right to development, so he knows all about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And if you don't know about these documents, I suggest that you really use them at work. If the right to development is a three-page document that really shows how developed countries and developing countries need to work together, and that's the framework for MDG 8, the partnership that has to be between the two levels of development. Especially for MDG 5, you need to know, especially I see some young professionals, you need to know about the International Conference on Development and Population, and Cairo Plus 5, and Cairo Plus 10, and Cairo Plus 15 that is coming up. The Beijing Conference on Women, the Millennium Declaration that Mini talked about, and also the Paris Declaration. The Paris Declaration is a document that is set three or four pages too, and it declares five principles on how countries need to work together. The principles are ownership, harmonization, alignment, focusing our work on results, real results, measurable results, and then finally, I forgot the last one. Accountability. Thank you. Thank you. You're listening to that. Great. So being accountable for our work. So you know the 8 Millennium Development Goals, and they have become known with all these little logos. I want to bring your attention to MDG 5 because it shows that women have our heart and our bellies. But the important thing is that we are not just a woman. We are human beings. And we need to understand that we're talking about really women's health, not just maternal health. And we need to see the long spectrum of women's health. Now, what is a goal? In our programs, we worked on what is a goal, and I dream of a world where we are going to have access to healthcare. Every woman will have access to healthcare when they get pregnant, and they will also be able to choose when to get pregnant. And by having that dream, it still stays a dream unless you put a deadline, unless you decide, now I'm going to do something about it. That's why we call it that a dream is just a dream, but unless you put a deadline, then it becomes a goal. We are using this to create urgency, so we act now. And the need to work at global scale to really have impact on MDG 5. For instance, there used to be 500,000 women that used to die of preventable conditions. Now, what about if we had 1,000 NGOs each working in a coordinated way, each accounting for preventing 500 deaths each a year? We don't know how to work in partnership. We don't know how to share information. We don't know how to articulate and harmonize our approaches. So if each of you works in an NGO, why not create a partnership that really accounts for the number of women served and the number of lives saved. The principles of our Health for All Women now, and I believe that this is something that we need to look for when you think of the future, what's going to happen when the next generation of public health professionals starts to work. We really need to ask ourselves certain questions, and there are certain principles on how we are going to reach MDG 5. There has to be quality of care. Now we know, for instance, remember the three delays in getting maternal health care? Women now know when they have a complication, they know where to go. Sometimes they get there, but when they get there to that facility, the facility is not ready. Their facility doesn't have blood, or it doesn't have supplies, or the staff have not been trained. So now we have women that know that they have a complication and get there, but the quality of care is not there. Also, we don't have a concerted approach as to what is the most efficient way of really providing antenatal care, labor care, and postpartum care. Everybody does it in a different way. We don't know what is the most efficient way of really reaching every woman. And finally, to do that consistently, you go to one clinic, they do it one way. They go to another clinic, they do it, depends on who's there. There has to be consistency. Our approach focuses on reaching everybody, and that is because I believe that there's lots of new professionals that really want to help. They really want to work to prevent maternal deaths, but they don't have a job. And they can't get a job because they don't have experience. And they can't get experience because they don't have a job. So we created a program that allows a new professional to learn what I know after 30 years of working in this business and quickly apply it and help others. So that's how we're going to reach out to the million of women that need healthcare, when we have professionals that are there asking the right questions. And it doesn't have to be a very senior and more expensive public health professional. It can be a new professional that has a lot more energy than me. And that can travel and puts up with jet lag a lot better than I do, and that can help. And by helping the new generation to get jobs, to get started in really preventing maternal health, by creating approaches that enable them to be effective, to provide quality care, and to do it in a consistent manner, I think that we're going to have a cadre of professionals that are going to really respond to this silent epidemic. The Health for All Women approach is based on a number of exercises, and it's based on a number of questions that our staff learn to ask. And what we do is that we help people come up with solutions at their own level. One of the problems that Gopal was talking about is that to reach the MDGs, everybody's thinking of the same things. They're trying to use the same approach in every country. What we need is a bottom-up approach that each country, each person, decides what is right for them, for their villages, for their districts, for their countries. And the only way to enable them to really come up with solutions that are right for them and to make the best of the resources that they have is by asking the right questions. So we ask them, for instance, what do you really want to achieve? What is that health professional there? What do they want to achieve? And how is it that they are planning to achieve that? And how they're going to set their goal and how they're going to get to really help all the women in their area? The important thing is that when you're working with professionals in another country, you really have to help them take the first steps and to do it in a way that builds their confidence and that really empowers them, and to stay motivated, because they are going to face so many challenges every day that it's important that they learn to overcome them and to be resourceful. And here are some results of some of the participants of our programs. We coach them online through email and Skype, and we help them come up with targets. For instance, this is one person in Zambia, and she reached in one quarter over 1,000 girls on how to delay intercourse and how to learn about reproductive health and stay in school. She also involved the parents and the health workers. Sorry. And that is just one person. So imagine if we can reach more people in this way. And this is done all online. This is another person from Myanmar. And the important thing is that we measure work. We need to measure what is happening this month and next month. And if then something doesn't get done, we need to ask the right questions. Why is it not? Why? We need to overcome the challenges along the way. And finally, I wanted, if there's time later on, to give, I know I don't have time, so I'll be happy to give a demonstration. So, but in any case, what I would like to say is that we need to scale up, and to do that, everybody needs to step up and to really start doing something now. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'm just, thank you very much. I just want to, and you could see that, you know, it was a very well-behaved moderator and panelists. We did not have fights with water being thrown on each other for entertainment. But just wanted to say that, to sum up briefly, 30 seconds, and then I'll open the floor for comments and questions, is that the Millennium Development Goals was like a really great strategy or plan or, you know, initiative which was launched, but then it didn't start, it does not stop there, and it needs to go beyond 2015. And I think we had a discussion as to where we saw what can be done, what are the barriers, and everybody needs to be involved. It's just not, it cannot be a top-heavy approach which the policymakers or the government saying something. So it has to be, we are all stakeholders in promoting global health within the realm of MDGs. So with saying that, I would like to thank the panelists very much. Thank you so much. It was really an honor. And now I would like to throw open the floor for questions. We have about 18 minutes. So if you could introduce yourself and ask a question, if it's directed to one particular panelist or to the whole panel, that would be nice. So, yes, sir, could you please introduce yourself?
My name is Dr. Chidi. I'm from Nigeria.
Welcome.
Thank you. I must thank the panelists for a very wonderful presentation. Particularly, the only gentleman in the group, I would like to make a comment on your presentation, sir. I have always had the same feeling that you had, that these goals shouldn't just be an across-the-board thing. You must be able to look at it from the situation, what this each country is experiencing. And if you look at it that way, you don't create, you don't set goals that those countries can never achieve. It becomes demotivating. And we need to understand this. We need to go back again and check and say, good, for this country, this is the goal we should set. It's achievable. There's no need dreaming dreams that, man, you can't even put a stop to it. So I want you to go away from here and take a lot of what you have said. Forget, say it out. Let us go back to the drawing board and bring up a system that would actually make the Millennium Development Goals achievable. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your comment. Gopal, would you like to say
anything? I'm more inspired by what you have said. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing that. That was very nice. Yes, could you please identify yourself?
Yeah, my name is Haile Yamshete. I came from Ethiopia, from the
Welcome.
Association. Mine is a general comment. Anybody can probably answer, but I just want to ask about the consistency of data that we get from different sources. You know, data that we get from donors, data that we get from countries, data that we get from researchers, that sometimes, you know, they are not consistent. Like in the recent, September meeting in New York, each country has presented, yeah, you know, the status of the trends, you know, of the MDG. And in most countries, you know, they have successfully reported that there's a good progress, like what we presented. But also, you know, the information that we get, like from DHS or, you know, from independent researchers, you know, DHS, like in my country, have not been conducted. It's going to be done in 2010. And the information we have from 2000, 2005 is a bit outdated. And in 2010, we may probably get a good data. But even that data may not be representative, because DHS is only, you know, on a random basis, you know, household survey, which may not directly, you know, involve all, you know, the maternity days or the child mortality. That has to be collected full data from all households. So countries like my country usually report good progresses on MDGs in child mortality, maternal mortality, and others. But So how do we rely? I mean, some of the presentations are aggregated data from all regions, and that bothers me sometimes.
Thank you for your question.
I cut my tooth when I started working immediately after medical school in the National Smallpox Eradication Program. You had external evaluators for the program. Unfortunate thing here is you have research projects and evaluation projects, but not countrywide checking the validity of the data. And there is a need to show progress both from the donor perspective, because the donors would like to say that this money which I provided has been put to good use and has shown these results. It is also important from the national perspective, because the nation as a recipient of donated money plus its own efforts and its own resources want to show that it has made progress. So there is a lot going in for showing positive results. But at some point in time, people have to stop and have a good external evaluation. And that's the only time when the credibility of the data and the problems which you pointed out so well will be put to rest.
Kathy? Now I'm going to have Kathy answer that, and then I will take your question, and then yours, Laura.
This is an ongoing problem, because in many places the data are at best so-so. At some point you have to go, these are the data we have, this is what we will work with. We've been using the figure of 500,000 women dying each year related to pregnancy for years, which in a way didn't make sense anyhow, and then all of a sudden,
researchers
re-looked at the data that had said 500,000 and said, you know what, we really counted wrong, it's only 325,000. Which now creates a very big problem in, have we or have we not cut maternal deaths when the number we started with as baseline is up for grabs? In one sense, part of building development has to be building infrastructure that knows how to count and setting that in place. But until that happens, that's got to be on the agenda to happen, is counting. On the agenda in terms of counting has got to be all births must be registered. Even the United States misses births, and almost all kids here are born in hospital. But not all kids are, and there are whole groups of population who don't consider a person to be counted until they get to their first birthday, because where they come from, the kids don't get there. And so we miss infant mortality, the under 1 years, because they were never registered in the first place. They didn't exist, and therefore they're not lost. And then you don't know you have a problem. Under one-year-olds aren't dying. Well, they're dying in droves, but they were never counted in the first place. So part of the whole development outlook, which is not included in the discussion of the Millennium Development Goals, is development and getting the infrastructure so that you can actually measure what you're doing. And because if you can't measure, you don't have no way of knowing if you've made progress or not. In medical school, we're taught that, your clinical impression is only the starting point for an idea to think about developing a project. It is not fact.
And I just want to add to what Gopal and you said, Kathy, and then go on to the next question, and I'll have you ladies take the next question. So it's also, unfortunately, the standards used for reporting are not reliable. We don't know about the validity, and we don't know if the same thing is counted or something is missed. So there are a lot of gaps. But that being said, these represent human beings. They're just not numbers. So that is also, that fact should not escape us. Because every maternal mortality, infant mortality, or crude death rate, whatever it is, it's not a number. It's representing people. So I think this is something which needs to be, as Gopal said, looked at by external evaluators. So it's really something which we need to spend time about. The next question, could you please identify yourself?
I'm Diane. I'm a pediatric nurse practitioner with the Children's Health Fund. And I wanted to pick up on your comment about coordination of so many of the different groups. But before I let you address that, because I think it's so important, I was listening in on a webinar for Pneumonia Day. And there was a lot of competition, it seemed, around the money for malaria and tuberculosis and immunization. And Jeff Sachs, who's with the Earth Institute at Columbia, says, there's not enough money to go around. We have got to work together and stop competing. Can you expand on that and some ideas that you have about
that? Is your question directed to Dr. Berkowitz, Dr. Falvo, or like the whole panel?
Well, I think it was at you, Dr. B, who, with your maternal...
That's what I thought you directed it to.
You started it, but I think each one of you would answer it in a different way, maybe?
Yeah, I believe that there's a lot of competition in our business, and that's why there is so much fragmentation. And because there's a short-term mentality, you just go as far as your project goes. We have to think in terms of a global plan. We have goals. It's good to have goals because at least now we know that, for instance, the information that we have is but that's not recorded, right? But the important thing is that we need to look at the goals and then come up with a plan. We don't have a global plan. The GA, sometimes they get together and they decide, but then they don't follow through, and nobody gets accountable. That's why there has to be civil society, there has to be human rights activists that hold them accountable for those commitments. And we also need to advocate with donors to change how they allocate their funding, because the donors are the ones that are creating the competition. And the focus has to be on the results, getting the results, and there has to be incentives for creating partnerships. A partnership that really transfers the capacity. The knowledge is all here. What I need is to create more people that know what I know and quickly apply it. But if I believe that if I transfer my knowledge, if I transfer my program, Google all my programs, and then nobody else is going to come in and give me business, then I'm going to be in trouble. But if then I know that I'm going to transfer that and I'm going to create capacity, and then I'll be able to go to the next level. When I hope that the next generation of public health professionals doesn't have to fight diarrhea and pneumonia and malaria again. I hope they'll be fighting HIV/AIDS and cancer and diabetes and other things. There has to be a way of being accountable for what we're doing. And the only way to do it is by sharing information, and the incentives to do that don't exist. That's why there is so much fragmentation. So we need to be honest with ourselves and realize that there's a problem with the way we practice global health. And it's reflected in those indicators that Gopal was showing, that we know where people are dying, we know where the red marks are. Why don't we do something about it? Why do all the donors go to the same place, or all the NGOs are working in the same district? We need to have better ways of coordinating. Unless we acknowledge that we are part of a problem, we cannot be part of a solution. So I'm advocating for that, and my colleagues here support that, and I'll continue doing that. And I'm very glad that you are also aware of that. I don't know how it's going to happen, but we need to do it.
And I just like to add one thing, and I'll ask Soumya if you want to answer that question. Is that unfortunately a lot of the donor or the people who get major fundings from the donors do not want to share their resources. I don't want to name names, but we face this problem a lot in New York, as I'm sure you do from other parts. So as I said, we can't be selfish when I was talking is that's why we need to share our resources, because we work for a common good. It's not that you're competing with each other, but the people who say that sometimes don't share their resources. That is the biggest challenge. Soumya, would you like to add something to that?
No, not really about this, but if I can address the data question that somebody raised,
sure. I'll give you some time, and then I think we have a couple of more hands too.
Can I have just say one more short thing on this?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you 30 seconds.
Okay. So two things about this last question. One is that I think what we need is a motto outside every meeting doors, leave your ego outside.
Yeah.
But the other thing is I've heard Jeff Sachs talk about this, and he said there's not enough money unless we reevaluate our budget plans, and if we cut our military budget very little and make the military be a little more efficient, we have plenty of money to go around.
Thank you. And I think the data question, Samia wanted to answer, and then Laura, and then I, yeah, there was somebody here, then you, and then you. You're the last question.
Okay.
You wanted to answer the data question.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the data issue. And yes, different countries have their own data sources, and there are issues with them. And just like Gopal mentioned, everybody has their, you know, there are problems with data. You have DHS data, which are a consistent source of data. They have their own problems too. And I agree, like, based on what the person said, yes, you don't go to every single person, but there's a certain methodology where you try and hope to see, to make sure that it's a nationally representative sample. One of the issues is, at least for program purposes, I remember I was at a meeting somewhere, and people from the country said, we can't really use it for program purposes because we want district-level data. That's what we want to use. But data are available at a regional level or higher level. Those are issues that can't be sorted because, you know, at the district level, it's not representative. You don't have enough people. But it's still a consistent source of data that's available across countries. There are other estimates available as well. The UN and other agencies, WHO presents representative country data. The UN makes estimates as well of various sources of various indicators. And particularly maternal mortality, as you mentioned, is really hard to measure. It's an estimate, and given the number of maternal deaths, you know, unless you have a really large sample, it's very hard to know exactly what the maternal mortality ratio is in a country, and that is problematic. Even with the DHS, it's not very easy. Not every country comes up with MMR numbers based on the DHS. But the other point I wanted to raise also was, with the MDGs, when they came up, yes, targets were set and said between 1990 and 2015, we're going to bring down mortality by a certain level. I don't know how, was everybody clear that we would have one number for 2015 for every indicator, for every country? I'm not quite sure.
They had a percentage, actually. There wasn't like a number.
They're all percentages.
Yes, they're not numbers,
they're
percentages.
All percentages, but it still has
yes.
to be and
there was
an
no
estimate.
Numbers. Yes.
Because, yes, you can take the most recent DHS data point or a UN estimate of something, but it's not going to match 2015 for every country. The other issue is, even when you use data, if you use the DHS data, and you have an infant mortality rate of 150 in a country, it's really deaths that took place in the last 5 years. So the data are old. If you have an Ethiopia DHS in 2010, the infant mortality rate reflects data in 2007. It's really not 2010 data. And that's something you need to remember when you look at data and use it in any analysis. They do not reflect
the current data
point.
Thank you so much. I think Laura, next question in the interest of time, yeah, are you addressing it to anybody on the panel specifically?
No, I think it's in general.
Okay.
I'm Laura from I live in Peru and work with future generations. And my question is about equity, which is a word that I haven't heard yet in this session. And I think it's extremely important. So the data is very clear that there are gradients, urban rural, socioeconomic. And in order to reduce the MDGs, we know that we have to address the most difficult parts, the neediest parts of each country. And so my question is kind of an open question for everybody, because I don't really know. I mean, do the MDGs, are the people who are promoting these talking about equity? Are they talking about going to the most difficult places first? Are they using the opportunity to educate countries that we need to address, you know, the most needy populations first in order for the country itself to meet its own MDGs. So that's kind of, that's an open question.
So two answers, two quick answers.
Does it really have an answer?
Two quick answers. One is, if you look at it in terms of gender equity, that
yes.
certainly is there, the goal itself.
Goal.
The thing if you're looking for is, are they going to the hardest place to go? No. And the reason is obvious, because the unit cost of providing service to them is always going to be much higher. And when you are showing project results in 1 year, 2 year, and 3 year, you want to show a dramatic increase. So that is one of the challenges always. And that's one of the, so it's not, I don't think that's something which is very unique to to the MDGs themselves. But what is critical in terms of what you're saying, the equities should be something which cannot be done only for the MDGs. Equity has to be woven into the fabric of the society so that if women and children, girl children, are the ones who are being affected by this more adversely than others, that's something which has to be addressed. And it has to be addressed across the board. And it cannot be addressed whether it is in the low-hanging fruits, as we say, or it cannot be addressed only in the places where these indicators are terribly bad. It has to be addressed everywhere, because as you saw, they impinge on virtually every one of those MDGs. Unless we change those underlying reasons, root causes, whatever we want to call it, things are not going to change.
Thank you, Gopal. In the interest of time, your next question is yes. Could you please introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Mercy Kamal. I'm a PhD student in health policy and global health from the University of Massachusetts Boston, and I'm also from Kenya. And I thank you for the presentation. I do support MDGs, but my only concern with the MDGs is that although most of the goals have to do with health, we are talking about child, maternal, and infectious diseases. It says nothing about non-communicable diseases, chronic diseases, cardiovascular diseases, and particularly in Africa, and most of the research I'm involved in Kenya, we have a huge prevalence rate for these cardiovascular and chronic diseases, particularly within the last decade or so, and it says nothing about it. There are no indicators. So somebody says that you cannot achieve the Millennium Development Goals with mothers dying, and I add with fathers dying, and they are dying, but not from infection, not necessarily from infectious diseases or disease. So, my question to all of you, like, what are your comments that we have the Millennium Development Goals that do not address chronic diseases, and when they do not address chronic diseases, and the countries are really trying hard to achieve the goals that we have as indicators, they completely neglect chronic diseases because there are no indicators for them. And that's really, for me, since my race in cardiovascular disease is a really area of concern, because when I go to talk to the government of Kenya, the Ministry of Health, to them, cardiovascular diseases and chronic diseases, they are not even in their mind at all. They are only thinking about infectious disease, and I understand good. But I think in the long term, that's going to present a problem.
It's not even long term, it's now. 80% of the burden
is because of chronic disease.
Chronic non-communicable diseases are going to be in resource poor settings. And that's a WHO report which came 2 years ago. It's known. And it's not new either, what the reports are. The 1992 Global Burden Report, which is jointly developed by the Harvard School of Public Health and WHO, showed that there are three big areas which the world has not even addressed. One is the burden of the non-communicable diseases, which you're addressing. Not just one disease, but the whole array of them. The second is mental illness. And the third is impact of injuries.
Especially road accidents.
All of them. And we have been focusing only on infectious diseases because that's the model which we are used to. The single bullet which will take care of the single problem, the single agent. When it comes to these things, this whole notion of social determinants of health, when you do disaggregate what the social determinants of health, they're pretty much the same things. It is the place of residence. It is whether you have equal opportunity, whether women have gainful employment, whether women have opportunities to go. Millennium Development Goals, some of the data shows that what's the primary school enrollment rate? It says 80%. What is the finishing rate? No one publishes that data. So everybody says that, look, we have shown progress over here. And especially as you go into the higher levels after 8th grade, it's a precipitous drop for women as compared to men. And those things are not even brought out in the discussion.
And I just want to add one more thing that you said. That is definitely there, and more now, some of the countries, and recently, a couple of months ago, the Caribbean countries, the mission in the UN, along with the WHO, had a whole program to focus on this. So it is there, but it's not built into the MDGs. So when we talk about MDGs beyond 2015, definitely we need to focus these three points. I think you had... Yeah, sure. Yeah, and then we have to move on to the next question. We're out of time.
Yeah, that's right. Now, I'd just like to say that the goals just say what are the priorities in terms of development. It doesn't talk about health as a human right. It doesn't talk about primary health care. We need to understand that what is the use of saving a child, immunizing a child, and then it's going to die of HIV/AIDS, or then she's going to die of, during pregnancy, or then she's going to die of a heart attack. So we have to see health as a continuum. And now we are so fragmented, thinking of diseases and looking at this child as if the child is going to stay as a child forever. This child is going to grow and it's going to have needs. And the health needs of the whole country need to be addressed. The Millennium Development Goals is just a strategy to address some priority problems that we have as a planet, as a global plan. But each country has to have a health plan, needs to have a primary healthcare approach that meets the needs of everybody, if you understand health as a human right.
The last question.
I'll try to make this short.
Yes, please, because we're out of time.
All right, so there's a lot about donors, and Dr. Sukaran talked about how the availability of donor funds affects projects and achievement of MDGs. But I was wanted to ask if donor, the agendas of donors that provide money to NGOs that try to reach the goals affect the outcomes at all, especially when you're talking about something like MDG5, which has a lot of political, religious baggage that has to it, and each different, depending on where you get the money, different donors may have different requirements for the NGO. How does that affect the progress of the NGGs and development in general, and is there any training for donors for that, or is there any coordination between donors?
There is a need to train donors. Donors need to be aware that they need to hear these things. And it's almost my advocacy that you need to step up like Marcy did and stand up and speak. You need to really help people hear this thing. And I think they want to hear it.
I think there's a whole notion of, we are looking at it purely from a health perspective. Most of the goals that you see, they have connection to health. But the problems are not just health. The problems are social problems, are economic problems, are cultural. And those things take a lot of time and a lot of patience, a lot of deliberations, local solutions. Somebody defined a civil society as when the lights, you are crossing a road, you're waiting to cross the road, it's midnight, there's nobody else over there, the lights are red, and you are still waiting for the lights to turn green before you put your first step on the road. That's a civil society. What does that mean? It means that it is not a society which is driven on the basis of social legislations, but it is something where they inherently people think that we have to benefit other people, and that is what is necessary when you talk about donor relations. In donor relations, it is not a question of finding quick results. In donor relations, you are trying to find out what can be done to not just address one particular area, but to address what the how that whole ship can be raised. Because if some people are raised in a ship and some people are still one end of the ship is sinking, it's not going to work. And that's one of the greatest challenges in health, is often we focus only on health factors, because that's the one which you're trained to deal with, as compared to other factors.
And again, I just would like to add to what you said, that donors are not only education, but you know, when there are like restricted and unrestricted grants which donors give. So this also places an onus and a kind of sometimes it can be a barrier. So there are so many more issues involved with donors when they actually commit the funds. And again, if you commit an amount, it's not necessarily that you will see the full amount. You can see something less than that. And again, it depends on your performance. It just ties in so beautifully to what you said, that when, why is it that people don't go to difficult places? Because you need to show success to get your project funded for the next cycle. And I think Carol, you know,
and it works the same way for a donor,
yes,
which has to show success in order to get the money from the legislature.
Yeah, that's
for the next
it.
Year.
So it's a vicious cycle.
You need to educate your legislators.
That's why I speak up.
Write your congressman.
Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.